It's 11 o'clock on a Thursday. It must be time for Green Zine. And, well, we're going to be talking a lot about Solar Fest. We've got a special guest in the studio. We're going to talk about arts and culture and trying to get our community a little bit closer to each other. I'm going to hang up this phone. I don't think I hung up on Henry. He's in the system. He's lost in the system. Hopefully AI does not gobble him up. Let's go to this piece of music. I haven't played it in a few years. We're going to be seeing a lot of solar panels, both small. There's even an EV charger there. And a really big solar array over in Brandon as Solar Fest gets celebrated this weekend. It starts tomorrow and goes right on through Sunday. Let's go to this classic from Little Village. Might have recognized the lead vocal of John Hiatt. I think George Harrison may have been in the band. Was Ringo in there? I don't know, but they were only together a little bit. Maybe Tom Petty. Little Village there with Solar Sex Panel. I do not name these songs, but a lot of good message about renewable energy and getting off of fossil fuels. Let's see if Henry's with us. Henry, are you there?
I am. You didn't lose me in hyperspace.
No. And I was concerned that the AI machine may have taken you away and we'd just be getting a digitally enhanced conversation from you. But we're going to get real human interaction today.
That is excellent. Is Dawn with you?
Dawn is here. We've been chatting a little bit offline, and I told her that we were going to just sort of do our intro and do our underwriters and do Bird Note, and then we're going to speak with Dawn. So why don't I take care of our underwriting, because it is so important. I know that you told me to scroll ahead with Bird Note because they had a little fundraiser plea, and that is based on the fact that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting basically just got zeroed out. And some of those funds are supposed to go back to the federal government. That is affecting public media, bigger stations than ours, small stations like ours around the country. Bird Note is offered to stations like ours for free. So if you do like Bird Note, you should check out their website. And if you want to make a contribution to them, you should do so. Green Zine is brought to you today by a couple of solar companies, Solaflect, based down in Norwich. Got to get a hold of Rob Adams down there. They're the moving panels, those panels that move with the sun during the day. Our local organization, Bale, building a local economy based right here in Royalton, South Royalton. Daniel Leibowitz, I was just in touch with him the other day, the very first treasurer of this radio station. And by the way, you are tuned to WFPR-LP in South Royalton. The Upper Pass Beer Company is going to be helping us out during our pedal power to the people, particularly with some thirsty riders returning from the dirt roads. First Branch Coffee Company, Solar Fest. Speaking of solar panels, a lot of solar panels you're going to see when you get there tomorrow, Henry. We're looking forward to that weekend, and we'll be spending most of the second part of the show talking about Solar Fest. Also, Wit and Grit up in Randolph, and finally, the Yes We Can Collective. I see that you have selected biomimicry with Billy Allman. Yeah. Is Billy the name of a bird? No.
Yes, the Billy Birds have bills.
The Billy Birds have bills. Shall we go to that and then introduce our guest?
Yes.
All right. We're going to keep the show moving quick. We got a lot to get to. Here's Bird Note. You're listening to Green Zine at Royalton Community Radio.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. For as long as humans have been solving problems, we've looked to the living world for inspiration. We've even got a word for it.
Biomimicry is a term that comes from the Greek. Bios meaning life and mimesis meaning to imitate. And so the idea is problem solving and innovation and design where we are imitating what nature has already created.
That's Billy Allman, a futurist and biomimicry expert who says that lots of modern inventions incorporate elements of biology, like airplanes.
That's an example of mimicry of form. So the Wright brothers, they actually studied turkey vultures and the aerodynamics of their wings as they were working on their first iterations of the airplane.
Nowadays, biomimicry is helping engineers design state-of-the-art technology, like energy-efficient vehicles and climate-resilient architecture. And Billy says there's still a lot more we can learn from nature, our first teacher.
I do believe that nature holds maybe not all solutions to all things, but I think a lot of what will be based on our continued understanding and exploration of the natural world.
Learn more about biomimicry in the latest season of Bring Birds Back, available in your favorite podcast app and at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Jazzy Johnson. Bring Birds Back is back starting July 30th. And our new co-hosts talked with world-renowned faves like J. Drew Lanham, Adrienne Marie Brown, and Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali. We're talking everything from the importance of songbirds to human memory, corvids to forest restoration, and scientists to the world today. You'll learn about indigenous water justice, biomimicry, even the power of radical joy, and how it all relates to our feathered friends. Follow Bring Birds Back in your favorite podcast app today or listen on birdnote.org.
Well, there you have it, our weekly installment of Bird Note here on Green Zine. Henry, very good. I'm going to be on the lookout for radical joy.
Yes, I was just going to pick up on that. I was saying I think that the work that our guest has done has tapped into some radical joy by getting people to to work together and to create together. So good transition.
Yeah.
I don't know if she would speak of it as radical joy, because it has its...
Well, she's got a pretty big smile on her face. Why don't you give her an official introduction? You haven't said her name yet, Henry.
Yes, so Dawn Lewinsky has joined for a couple of weeks the Vermont Law School campus, and last Saturday I went to her presentation, and last Thursday we promoted it. I didn't see anybody from our audience who showed up for that, but there were lots of people from the community that were there, and it was great to recontact and re-see people who I hadn't laid eyes on in 10 or 15 years in some cases. So community came together and was singing and being impressed with the song that Dawn has been teaching us to sing.
Great.
So it's integrating art and the community building properties of that. I think that's what we're going to focus on. Is it right, Dawn? Welcome to Green Scene.
Well, thank you both for having me, and that sounds like a good way to start. And I love the biomimicry lead-in. That it is a perfect complement to what I hope we'll talk about today.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. You're good.
Right. So let's jump right in. So not only visual art, but music involved in the work that you do?
Oh, my gosh. There
all kinds of things involved.
All of the senses, sometimes taste, sometimes smell, listening, seeing, and how do we do those things better together is a question. So creating forums that help us to do those things better together.
Yeah, and you were here, you were telling me off air, as part of a residency at the Back River Road. What's the end of that part?
That's right. Yeah, I'm a guest of not only this show, but a residency on Back River Road. That's a part of the Harpo Foundation. That was a foundation founded by Ed Levine, the founder of the visual arts program at MIT. And so on and off for 30 years, Ed had been living on Back River Road and has since passed in 2020 and gifted his home to artists to come and stay and be in retreat. And in my case, to be in community in conversation with you all for these last couple weeks.
Wow. And you might just give us a tiny bit of a flavor of what that place is like, because to me it resonates with Vermonters a lot, the connection between art and the land and nature.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Henry. I think that from my estimation, and I'm just getting to know Ed and his work, and living there certainly helps. There was a frenetic pace to him and those that were building with him that were interested in helping us to understand where the built meets the natural environment, and how when those two work in cooperation with one another, that we can see and hear and understand each other a bit better, whether it's our human kin or our non and multispecial kin.
Yeah. So, all right. So how do we give listeners a flavor of the what I believe to be a dramatic amount of power that getting people to come together with in a creative process develops for community.
Right. Well, to some degree, that's what Ed was doing on his property. So he has, dozens of structures that he had built with several people in the area over those decades. And so in those moments of building with materials from that land, with the wood and the stone, as well as people from the community that are bringing their skills and their expertise and their experiences of how they're seeing and experiencing the land. That created relationships in that creative process that have lasted till this day. And even in Ed's passing, just the other day, one of the individuals that had helped build the septic system and a number of the water features in these sculptures and pieces of architecture on the land knocked on the door and showed up and was telling me stories about what it was like to build with Ed, and was very curious to know who I was and why I was there. And so relationships continue even in our passing. And I think that is prescient when we think about our environment as well. So hopefully we begin to build and have those conversations and build those relationships through those conversations and creating work together, which maybe I'll be back in some time and we'll be doing here together in South Royalton, I hope.
Yeah. Is that your future project that we talked about, that you might be trying to do some creativity with capturing sounds from that intersection between nature and human built out infrastructure?
Exactly. And I should step back for a moment, because it may be, and to me sometimes is even confusing to describe myself as an artist or a visual artist, although that's one of the practices that I have. But I'm using, with a number of other people, a lot of different materials in our everyday lived experience, like food and serving food from countries with which the U.S. government is in conflict to create an art project, or taking people's conversations that we have on public transit and verbatim those becoming the libretto for operas and then reperforming those operas on the public transit where the conversations were collected. So the work can take many different forms and shapes, and particularly right now, given that we're in perhaps a post-apocalypse, if we're talking about climate crisis, or maybe some people are just coming to understand that regardless of they define it as us being in climate emergency, that their lived and everyday experience with air quality, water quality, access to land, relationship to our other living kin around us is changing. And so how do we bring us all together to help to describe and understand that, and not only practice being together now, but how do we practice being together in the future and embed those cultural practices so that we are working across difference, not only right now, but generations ahead?
Yeah, I find this conversation very interesting. There's an abstract sort of environmental, spiritual part to it, but it is, I think, the layperson can follow this. And I like your use of the term post-apocalyptic. My partner has seen some series, I forget the gentleman who put it on, but and there was a performance actually done out at Fable Farm about grief and what's happening with climate change and the climate emergency. And rather than running around and saying the sky is falling, and it literally is with a lot of the particulate matter that's in the air from the Western Canadian fires, but how do we as a culture, and obviously it's a very rural culture, and from talking to you, I think you live in a fairly rural area over in New York State, how do we come together and not necessarily count on what's going on in the legislature in Washington or in Montpelier, but be able to live lives in a very, a lot of reciprocity within the community, helping each other along and making that. I was going to ask you a little bit more about that sort of meeting of the human built environment when we think about the apocalypse. And this is not a gloom and doom episode of Green Zine, by the way, but a lot of what has been built by industry and by large human concentrations has been detrimental to nature, and has not been built in a way that's sensitive or that sort of correlates with nature. those difficulties. Do you feel that the folks that attended your workshop and other people that you've worked with are starting to get this? I talked with a woman at the co-op today who works there who definitely follows the environment. She's a farmer, and we talked about the air quality and how this is not just a one-off. This is something that's probably going to be with us for quite a while, and how people adapt. And I said, well, maybe it's a message that'll get to some people that have been sort of hiding under the covers. And she said, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to get it. What do you think?
I'm not sure. I can't predict the future.
No.
Certainly. But I think that we can rehearse or maybe pre-enact a different way of being together right now. And that one individual doesn't have the solution or the prescription for that future, but we do together, mm-hmm. right? And in fact, that is literally the case. And so if we practice it a little differently, what could that look like? And so a lot of the work that I've been doing on unceded Oneida Nation land in rural central New York and other locations in the world as well is to gather around mutual aid and redistributing our resources, whether it's cash, our food, our clothing, our shelter, to redistribute those resources a bit differently in a way that moves us from charity to solidarity. So, of course, then within that exchange of materials as well as skill sharing, to really shift culture, there needs to be some elements of political education, not to capitulate to governance that already exists, but how we are governing between each other and our relationships. As well as if this is to, you know, have traction long term, shift that culture. So the way in which we exchange, the way in which we talk about what we can get and what we identify as our needs and what we can give, and being able to have a more vulnerable and honest and transparent conversation about those things, which bringing people together around having those conversations, that's typically people that already agree with me. So the thought of this next project is to bring people together. Previously, it had been around food, right, with Conflict Kitchen, the restaurant in Pittsburgh. But now it's more about, instead of how do we eat together better, how do we listen together better? And so at the intersection of the built and the natural environment, getting people together to record and listen to what we're actually all hearing that we're so tuned out of listening to, whether it's a machine that is improving the quality of our life, but maybe for someone else it's not, right? So these aren't it's not equitably distributed, of course. So if we can begin to hear what each other is hearing, and then create a choir, perhaps, or a different song together through that, and interject a little bit of speculative fiction. Maybe we might have what I'm hoping will be a series of episodes of radio theater that helps us to think about what our future might be like together.
I could definitely see the radio theater part of that. We're hearing what I like to say is a positive sound going right now. Avid train rider. Haven't flown in an airplane, I forget the last time. It's been at least 15, 20 years. But that sound out there, if only it was an electric train, which maybe will come to this country eventually. But yeah, pulling a community choir that is intersecting with the environment and a positive future. How do you foresee people making that sort of transition from as far as what an individual, what a family, what a society needs and what it wants? Because sometimes those wants, particularly in a hyper-capitalist society like that we live in, start to become pretty daunting over the needs, which the needs leads to a little bit more equitable distribution. And rather than thinking about, as you were just saying, what one can get, but what one can give, and not just charity. I really like that phrase that you used there.
Right. Well, I think it's us trying to, if we continue with the metaphor of the choir, mm-hmm. there are many, I'm sitting next to this stack of CDs, of which there are many different individuals that decided to form bands in many different genres and approaches to sounding together. And yet they all exist on one shelf and intermingle when a DJ plays different songs together, right? So what does it look like for us to do that? It doesn't just appear. It's not something that we can policy ourselves to necessarily or law ourselves into. There's something that's essential in us wanting to make a sound with another person and being scared to do that perhaps, or being out of tune or not getting it quite right. And that's why, again, I keep going to this word practice. So if we assemble together to on a regular basis, practice differently together, we're going to have a cacophony of different approaches and different ways of being together that will hopefully, ideally, be in concert as opposed to being in ongoing antagonism. Although there is always reproductive conflict, we've known plenty of bands to break up and form their own, you know, so really seeing this work that we're trying to do, this approach to survival as a creative act, and that we are not separate from nature doing that, that we are a part of that.
Yeah.
I love your idea of coming together to actually have a visioning process, have a process of putting out what would we like the world to really be like. And I feel that has been so missing from the political spectrum. And that's the president I want to vote for, is the person that leads the charge on having a public discussion about what the world could be, rather than how to make the world more powerful or more financial impressive than it is now. The idea that it just takes money to make quality of life. It takes community and working together and joint vision and stimulating that locally as well as in politics and other walks of life just seems to me ever so important, because then the selfish needs disappear and it becomes a joint commons of how do we all invest in a joint vision for what's important to us.
I'm curious. I just want to follow on that, and also the fact that what we're talking about really is not financially involved at all. And Dawn, you were saying that you are actively involved at the unceded land of the Oneida over in mid-state New York. And, you know, indigenous folks that have been here a long time before the European settlers, for the most part, didn't really have a concept of property ownership. And does that inform some of your work living where you are and probably knowing some members of the Oneida tribe, that different perspective towards property and sharing, et cetera?
It definitely does. And I have relationships with a number of Haudenosaunee individuals that were cultivated from a previous time with the Conflict Kitchen Project. And then, of course, being a co-steward of the land with them at this time. But we can't erase money, right? Money does exist.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, and we need right now working within the systems as well, people to be taking approaches and in politics and within the financial sector and advocacy to shift our lawmakers, of course. And we need everyone working together in concert with their own gifts that they would like to offer. But I think to your point, this notion of property, right, that sort of larger concept of there isn't this notion that if something comes to you, that it is then yours in many indigenous cultures. And I don't want to speak in detail to that because I'm not an indigenous person. Although if we approach anything that comes to us as a gift and as something that could be and must be, it is contingent upon us to redistribute it in a way so the greater abundance that we receive the more responsibility we have to redistribute whatever that is. This is just a flow of resources, just like our air flows, our water flows. There isn't a holding back when we dam things right up. Then this is when we begin to create trouble. We'll begin to border things as nation states. This is when we begin to create particular crises and daily brutalities that become systematized violence. And of course, we have between person and person, and also our non-human kin. There will be conflict, but we don't need to add more on top of what already is naturally occurring conflict and practice to do that conflict as well a bit differently and know the difference between when power creates the conflict and the crisis and when we are having a crisis or conflict between ourselves and seeing that as an opportunity to begin to be in concert with one another a bit better. So that's, yeah.
So let me just give listeners my take on the conflict kitchen, which is going to be very, very narrow. But the conflict kitchen was looking at countries and cultures that that were in you know had a stressful relationship with other ones. And you made food of those countries, and you served that food, and you developed conversations, and then you captured those conversations and developed wrappers to put around the food that had the conversations broken down. And I have one of those wrappers in front of me, and the different blocks in that wrapper has won on what the food from that country is like. And then in the case, what I'm looking at is from Venezuela. And so they have won on oil because Venezuela has a lot of oil riches and it's very dependent on the oil to sort of make its economy function. And then there's one on the people, the culture of the country. And another one on international polarization and how there are countries that are against Venezuela just in general and countries that are for it. And perception of the U.S. government, another block on what the U.S. government thinks. Another one on the perception from Venezuela point of view of what U.S. citizens are like and how different that is. And another one on race and class. Another one on Chavez, who was such a dominating cultural thing. So, and all those were developed out of discussion and from the work of the food makers who were making and handing out food. So a pretty fascinating approach to drawing people together and the reason people would come to this is because those ethnic foods weren't available, and so this made them available. And then for the people who were just kind of bystanders, it was a fascinating place to go and get foods from nations that they hadn't had it from. So it's a neutral magnet to draw people together. You want to make any additional comments on that? But I think it's just a marvelous model of how art and culture and food can be the leverage point for people knowing each other better.
Well, no, I appreciate that your perspective of the story of Conflict Kitchen, Henry, and I think it's it's not so neutral. I think in the daily experience, right, there's the story of the restaurant that existed 7 days a week for 7 years. And then there's the daily, again, the daily practice, going back to this word of what the restaurant was and what the project was. And it was very much not a neutral project in that we were, in a way, using this framework of capitalism to seduce people into becoming seditious individuals. Hopefully that was the idea. Right. So people understand what takeout is in general. They usually approach it as a transaction that is quite one-sided and is consumptive. And so to get people to pause in that moment of consumption and understand that it's not quite that simple was a bit of the trick, the bait and switch of using a restaurant to get people to understand, like, where is this food coming from? Or why is the Haudenosaunee food the most, quote unquote, foreign to you when it is the food that is walking past this restaurant every day or is native to being grown on the land and that the land can support most readily. Or when we had our Palestinian iteration, why was that for some individuals in our community and around the world, the moment when the project went too far to serve Palestinian food? And how can that project as a forum hold the dialogue and the agonism that occurs when there clearly is a tension that boils over the top? And to what end is it meant to hold that dialogue and also to not solve it, to again, right, practice being in agonism with each other such that we don't re-embed that daily brutality with each other that those in power would want us to distract from the dailiness of being together well. Yeah, so maybe that's where a bit of the radical joy comes in, because it's really hard to argue with your neighbor when you have delicious food in both of your mouths. And but of course,
and you're looking at one another. It's a personal face-to-face piece of this, I think. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. And it's really hard when you can order all of your food, your takeout food now, to be delivered on an app, and someone somewhere is there are just so many people missing in the equation that we don't see that are getting our, even more so now, our daily caloric energy needs met. And that act is a creative act. That moment when you decide that you're hungry is truly a creative act with your body. That when you begin to listen to your body and know that you have the pangs of hunger, right? And I'm saying this knowing that there's obviously a genocide happening right now and a deep starvation purposely happening in Gaza right now, and that is, if we are not in tune with us understanding our own approaches to caloric needs being met, as all, and also like taste senses of like, where does this taste come from? Why am I hungry for that? How is that a part of like practices that I've had in the past? What relationship does that have to the land around me and those that are like creating the food and serving the food? I mean, we're just so far removed that we get to a point where, and this is obviously not only happening in Gaza, but South Sudan, I mean, any number of places that we can name in the world right now, that allows us to make decisions or perhaps govern with a state of mind that's so removed from not only other humans, but our own humanity. And so this was an attempt to begin to reconnect with some of that face-to-face at the takeout window. Yes.
Well, I think before we wrap up, I want to just go back to that intersection of, in the case here, we're talking about food, but also the arts, culture, whether it's film or music, that those are things that are shared by all humans on the planet, an appreciation of culture, from the least educated to the billionaire class. And to see that that is a shared experience, an important part of being human, and getting away from the top 1% and folks that are having a really tough time, it's really, really important. And I think we lose track of that. Society is moving so fast. We've got the introduction of AI. We have global conflicts that have been around forever. But sitting down face to face, one thing I enjoyed thinking back to the train going by, and just maybe a minor reason, but what I seek out when I ride on the train, and particularly a long train ride, is going to the lounge car, to the dining car, and bumping into a complete stranger from a totally different background, whether they're from this country or from another country. I'll never forget sitting down and having a dinner with a young couple that were celebrating their honeymoon, and they were from Siberia. And they had both gotten pretty good jobs. This is probably 10 or 15 years ago in Moscow. They were doing well financially, and I had some stereotypical look of what, a Russian would be thinking about the rest of the world. They were very supportive of the leadership at that time there. I asked them the questions. I didn't really reveal too much, because sometimes when we mention on the train that we live in Vermont, some of our other passengers say, oh, is that a province in Canada? And it's kind of hard to keep the conversation going after that. But that intersection of culture where there are needs, not wants, needs that are shared by all levels of society and humanity. And it seems like a lot of your work is in touch with that.
Yeah, and I think it also hopefully attempts to create a space where we can say, I don't know. Just admitting that one may not know, right, that Vermont is not a part of Canada, and having space to hold that indiscretion of fact, and then moving together to a shared sense of knowledge. So whether that's with science or with just listening to the birds. I know at Ed's property where I'm staying, those red-eyed vireos at 5:30 in the morning,
oh, yeah.
they're going strong, and in the creating the relationship with the hawk the two hawks that are just around me on those trees. I mean, that removing some of our other senses to concentrate on one. And that includes the individuals in our lives as well. So removing this notion of this person identifies as a citizen of Russia, but just that there's an individual in front of me, and that I appreciate hearing that story, because, and again, a daily practice that I know that I'm doing at the crossroads when I go there every evening to get my internet access and talking to Chris Babcock or any number of other Chris's in the area that have been so generous and kind, yeah. or just met with Earl the other day and Elena, okay. who's the new executive director of Bale. So like amazing, amazing people that, meeting each other face to face has been such a gift, and I hope I've extended the same sort of hospitality back to everyone.
I'm sure you have, and we're very fortunate. How much longer does your residency last here in this area?
Just a few days.
Just a few more days.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
but there's a chance you might come back.
Well, we're gonna try to find a way if the partnerships are there and if the interest is there from folks for us to work together. And across our network so that we can be stronger together as well.
Wow. Henry, any final comments for Dawn?
Well, I guess I would just thank you for your work, and I hope you will return to our area, but if not, return to Greenzine and lay out how this building process is working as time goes on, and other models we can look at and see if we can get some inspiration for here. I don't know if you have obviously you've got this sound idea for the intersection, but I don't know if you want to leave us a building kit to to talk across, you know, to do the equivalent of music, where it doesn't make any difference if you're in a country that's totally in conflict with me. People are still humming the songs that come from their friends and neighbors and from the people who they have learned to hate. The music transcends that cultural divide.
Well, you don't need a kit from me. You have, only having been here a few weeks and talking with a number of people, you have what you need right here. There's some amazingly gifted, talented people, including both of yourselves, that are dedicated to each other. And so that's, if we don't meet again, I hope we will. Just know that you're also welcome out my way, and that we'll just keep exchanging the information.
Yeah,
there's no toolkit. Yeah.
Right. Well, as long as you've got internet signal or a cell phone signal, modern technology, we'll definitely stay in touch. Don, really appreciate you spending time with us here on Green Zine.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
All right, Henry, I think we should move along to Solarfest starting up tomorrow, and you are heavily involved. I'm sort of involved. We've been going to Solarfest.
You're heavily involved, I would say.
Well, when did you first go to Solarfest? This is its 30th anniversary. Were you back there in the early days down at Forget-Me-Not Farm?
Well, definitely at Forget-Me-Not Farm, but probably not 30 years ago, but maybe 25 years ago.
Yeah.
It definitely had been going a number of years. I wasn't in on the very... It was in full bloom when I first went, with scads of workshops. I remember taking a workshop with Steve Letendry.
That name rings a bell. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had him on Green Zine.
Okay, that's probably why it rings a bell.
I don't know what he's doing now, but he was a professor at Castleton College, and he had been given a project to look at the value of EV batteries to the grid, and we talked with him about that. And at the workshop, he understood all of the different technologies of solar panels, and there is a lot of more technology to making solar panels better that have not been introduced, largely because volume is what drives the price down. And so the new technology, being a different manufacturing process, doesn't have the volume right away, and so there's a hurdle to moving up. We could probably increase the output of our solar panels by another 15% or 20% by going to better technologies. And a little technology increases have been made even in the mass production zone, but those things are just fascinating that level of detail is there at Solarfest workshops. I mean, I get fascinated by technology. And this upcoming Solarfest certainly has many workshops that are not in any way connected to technology.
Mm-hmm.
There is going full loop the concept of community building and the role of arts and communicating with one another. There's a workshop on the importance of co-op food stores and how they function that way, and also especially how our food system is really very bad for our health currently, and that co-ops can lead the way to leading us back to healthy food and to generate that becomes business as usual, that we have higher density, nutrient density food grown locally instead of current food system, which is mining the soil and polluting the environment and so forth.
Yeah, I'm looking at the whole list of workshops here, and just so folks know, there's a whole lot of music going on and a great documentary film tomorrow night about early communes in Vermont back in 1970. But I'm noting here the keynote address on Saturday, and Saturday is the really big day as far as number of workshops, amount of music, and the keynote address, which I think ties to what you were just talking about, is by Kathy Stanton, Dr. Kathy Stanton, and the title is Resistance in Aisle 3, Shopping for the Future That We Want. I imagine she might be talking about co-ops and where our food comes from and other items that we need, hopefully not that we just want. So I'm looking forward to that. And Henry, you tomorrow are doing a workshop that we've slid in just under the wire. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your workshop?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the power of natural systems and really dig into having people understand how our climate, environment, our food production, our the rain cycles, how all those things come together and make a more livable planet. And when you as we have rising temperatures, there is a lot of stress on that system. And then you pile on top of that the fact that we're deforesting the world and that we are destroying our topsoils with our farming practices, makes it very difficult to buck that tide. And understanding that system and knowing what the power of it is, and I have one of our previous guests, I have a clip from a presentation of his on the importance of biodiversity, and another clip from another person on the quorum theory and what happens when you start having multiple plants, and another piece on what happens when you let compost age longer and how it becomes more diverse and be more important to the environment. So those are things that we'll hopefully get into some, then look at, okay, so how do you make that happen? How do you make changes like that?
Right. And for those who are more politically inclined, I'll just mention a couple here, and this one will be presented a couple of times on Saturday. Climate emergency, stopping the EPA repeal of the endangerment finding. I think some law students are going to be, actually, maybe they're putting that one on, are going to be appearing. But this one's being presented by one of the regular writers for Green Energy Times, which we often source here. Alan Baer is going to be doing that talk. And go ahead.
And there are many of these key talks like that one are repeated multiple times across across the days of the workshop.
Yeah, and that, so that's kind of on the political front. And here's one where you're interfacing with nature in a very proactive and beneficial way. Every field is a teacher. How to create, maintain, and validate a pollinator habitat. Mike Kiernan will be putting on that workshop on Saturday afternoon at, looks like, 1:15. And he is from an organization called Be the Change. That's B with a couple of E's. And it's just an amazing, so you can learn how to grow your own oyster mushrooms at home. There's a couple of building projects for building sustainable, efficient housing, a sort of a restoration of an 1860s falling down farmhouse. There are quite a few of those in Vermont. As you've commented in earlier shows, some of the oldest housing stock in the country is right here in Vermont. So lots of different places. They're all really close by. You can just bounce from one workshop to another and then check out the music as well when you need a break.
Two workshops on solar for you, the ways that you might have solar in your life.
Yeah, I was in communication with Jen and Andres. Andres, a previous guest here on the show, who, remember, he put his whole solar array together. He's thinking of expanding over there, and I thought, wow, Andres not only should go to one of these workshops, but maybe next year Very much like our guest Dawn, maybe should be leading a workshop at Solarfest when it enters year 31. I think it's going to be a good time. We're kind of in a drought period, but at least for Solarfest, maybe the rain, we need a lot of rain on Monday, but maybe we could stay dry throughout the weekend.
Yeah, I think this Canadian smoke and high pressure zone that we're in is pretty sticky right now. I think maybe the weekend will be rain-free all the way through. And there's camping at Solarfest.
Yes, so. there is camping, and I took a little bike ride down there when I was visiting last week, Henry, and I think on Saturday morning, anybody that I see with a bike, I'm going to say, hey, before we get involved with the workshops, let's go enjoy the farmland countryside. It's only about an hour ride. I think it was 10 or 11 miles. It's kind of an around-the-block ride. Going to have some fun with that. And if you do come, stop by our radio stage, which will be right next to the main stage. We'll be helping out with some side music, etc., and learn more about how community radio likes to get involved with the community and build connections. Hey, real quick on the air quality, which has taken up a lot of air time, so to speak, everywhere. We've had haze for several days, and there is a good overview in Vermont Digger. I won't get into it, but if you were to go to vtdigger.org, we're now in the fourth straight day of poor air quality in this state. And it's giving some advice, not only statistically about the history, but what's coming up in the future. And it looks like one of the graphs showing here is how air quality in Burlington has been affected by the Canadian wildfires. And not really good. We're not ending the show quite yet, but folks should be very aware. I know the last few days when I get up and look at the weather report, I don't look at the temperature and whether it's going to rain or not. I look at the AQI right off the bat and go, a little bit better today. Maybe this will go away. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you smelled any smoke down there?
We
had just one day here in Burlington that we could actually say, someone's has a campfire going.
On my little walkabout between shows this morning, yep, I could smell it, and it wasn't local. It was coming from away. That hasn't been constant. Yesterday, I didn't smell it as much. And it is, those wildfires think, well, what are you going to do about a wildfire? Well, it's so dry in those places that it's almost impossible to put them out. Henry, got any things that folks should know about other than Solarfest that are coming up, guests next week, et cetera?
Well, I'm aiming to see if we can swing back. For several weeks was trying to get people on to talk about geothermal heat using ground source heat pumps. And maybe we can arrange them for next week. There's two or three people who might jointly join us, and we're trying to put together a schedule that works for them. But that's a very efficient way to do heat pump technology, but it has the problem that if you're out on your own, it's a fairly big upfront cost. So it needs to be a group operation of some kind.
Yeah.
Although there is a New York State, a company that's operating in New York State, who is figuring out how to do it for individual houses. And hopefully they will come to Vermont in the not too far distant future.
Yeah, so underneath us right now, I don't like to step on vocals. We're going to keep this kind of low, but this is one of the bands that's appearing at Solarfest on Saturday. They'll be taking the stage, I think, at about 4... No, actually, they're in the evening. After the keynote speaker, the Mammals will take the stage. They're from over Woodstock, New York way. This is a brand new single that they just put out called Luna Light. Hey, let's acknowledge our underwriters, Henry, and then I've got some late-breaking news on EV chargers here and a prediction. Well, maybe just an observation. So Green Zine is brought to you today by the Yes We Can Collective. Yeah, indeed, in-house here, we collect redeemable cans and bottles and take them in. And once that adds up to $150, hey, that's a collective underwriting credit on the radio. Wit and Grit Restaurant up in Randolph. Solarfest, of course, First Branch Coffee Company, Solaflex Bale, Royal Trail Works, Daniel Leibowitz, and the Upper Pass Beer Company. Here's the late-breaking news. They are not operational. I just talked with someone, but there are brand new EV chargers, 8 of them below the law school here. And if you count those chargers and the ones that are down at the other parking lot and the 2 possibly future EV second level 2s that are coming to Tunbridge, we could be like charge center for central Vermont, Henry. What do you think?
All right. I think it is good, good, good. Last week when I came in and did the show, I did that piece in Oaks Hall, I charged my vehicle.
Excellent. There. All right. We're running out of time, Henry. Good to be with you. WFVR-LP, South Royalton.
See you tomorrow.